This episode is brought to you by Smart Food Popcorn. Some decisions aren't the best, like skipping ahead in your favorite podcast. Think of all the banter you'll miss, the lore in the making. Luckily, Smart Food Popcorn is a no-brainer. Deliciously tasty and available in a variety of fun flavors. It's a smart decision every time. Smart Food. Add smart. To learn more, visit smartfood.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, it's Lee Salisbury here. Welcome to Soap from the Box, the TV behind-the-scenes podcast where I speak to some of the biggest stars from the biggest shows. EastEnders, Neighbours, Home and Away, Hollyoaks, Coronation Street and Emmerdale. I directed Soap for over 10 years, so it's a bit of an insider's guide and you get the best behind-the-scenes stories. Also remember, Pop from the Box, the spin-off show, you can download some of the world's biggest music stars. We had Sophie Ellis-Bextor on Friday, but today it's time for another soap star, a proper OG, one of the original cast members of Channel 4's Hollyoaks. So many life stories, so many amazing things he's done. I can't wait to speak to him. Enjoy. My guest today rose to instant fame when he landed the role of Rory Finnegan, Finn, in Hollyoaks soon after it began in 1997. Staying for 5 years, he became one of the most popular stars, but left Finn behind and brushed up on his medical knowledge to take the role of Abs Denham for 5 years on Casualty. He's since appeared on some of the UK's biggest shows and is now a regular on the stand-up comedy scene. It's a pleasure to welcome James Redman. Hi, James.
Hi, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate. So, I mean, what we do on the podcast is always start with the soap, and there's obviously kind of a few for you, and then talk about a bit more about you. But I didn't know this, and whether it's true, because it's from Wikipedia, and a lot of stuff is absolute rubbish on there, but apparently you were modelling before you got Hollyoaks. You were spotted by fashion scout Kelvin French, not that I know who that is, and you're in Milan, and then you got Hollyoaks from kind of the adverts. Is that kind of true?
That's right. Yeah, it's a bit of a weird way to start, having never done any training, you know. Not sure if that shows. I was traveling around and working in bars and stuff. And I was on Mykonos working in the bars there. And I got scouted. And this guy, Calvin, said, you know, do you fancy modeling? I said, well, I've never done any. And he said, well, why don't you move to Milan?
Wow.
I said, well, I don't even live in London. I live in Bristol. But then I went back and he kept in contact. And I thought, well, you know, my cousin's out there. She was a dancer at the time, so I can go and stay with her. And just as soon as I got there, I just started working, which was amazing. I couldn't really believe it. I wasn't really ready for it. I was very lucky. I came off the sort of wave of that sort of heroin chic, they were calling it, although I've never done drugs in my life.
That was the Kate Moss time, wasn't it?
That's it. Yeah. Because I got offered the modeling contract. I was like, well, it's all, you know, it's all Nick Kamen and, you know, all these sort of what I would call handsome guys, you know, with olive skin and bob haircuts and muscles and stuff. Do they really want me? I look like I've just been, you know, dredged up from somewhere. Sort of skin, bleach white hair and all this. And, but yeah, that's what they wanted. The girls had come through the year before. This is like 93, I think. And then this is 94. I got offered a contract because they wanted boys who looked like Kate, I guess, you know. And I was working. I did a couple of jobs with Kate in the first few months. And
oh, did you? Lucky. Oh, amazing.
Yeah, I just worked. I was very lucky. Just worked constantly. And then the whole Britpop thing happened in 96. And I looked a bit like Damon by then. I had a bit of
Damon Albarn from Blur, yeah.
Yeah, I had a bass and haircut, and I used to get mistaken for him a little bit. And I started getting more and more work. And I thought, this is weird. Why am I getting more work? And then my agent told me. So
thanks, Damon. Thanks very much, mate.
these clients keep saying, we want a sort of Britpop-looking guy. So I just kept getting work. It's very lucky.
That's amazing. I've always wanted to say, I mean, what's it like when you get scouted? I mean, surely your first instinct must be, oh, yeah, whatever. Do you know what I mean? If someone comes up to you going, do you want to be a model?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was in a gay bar in Mykonos, and Calvin is gay. So it was a bit like, yeah, is this back at your apartment? It's just, just you and me. but it wasn't. And yeah, I mean, it was pretty sort of crazy, you know, very exciting. But also, no one believes you. All your mates at home and your family go, okay, so you've been to Mykonos for summer, but you're definitely straight, right? Okay. Got bleached white hair and loads of piercings, right? But you're definitely straight, okay. And now you've been off to go to Milan and model with this guy who's saying you can stay at his and he's gay. Okay, but you're
definitely not gay. This is brilliant. I love it. and then, so Hollyoaks, did that kind of, I mean, at the time, was Hollyoaks, I mean, your days of being in it, I mean, I'm not that much younger than you, but I was my end at uni kind of when I loved it. And it was huge. Was it huge when you joined?
It wasn't. Well, it was just getting there. I mean, I think it started filming in September 95 and went on air 96, I think. And I joined early 98. So your intro's slightly off.
Oh, slightly wrong. Okay. Oh, God. Right. Okay. Sack myself for that.
So 98, I started. I remember, you know, because I'd done like 11 TV commercials in 1 year.
Wow.
My agent said, that's too many. I said, oh, sorry. And he said, no. Oh, she said, no, it's good. It means that you can act a bit. I said, I can't. And she said, well, why don't you start doing some acting classes? So I signed up for acting classes. And then just before I started, I got this audition. And she said, look, go along. I'm sending Vernon he's like a mate of mine modeling at the same time, Vernon Kay. Go up there and just see what an audition is like. You know, it's an open call, like 100 guys there going today. It's like the third day of it. You won't get it, but it's a good experience for you.
Wow.
I bloody got it. You know, I was there. I was there the whole day. It was the final day of 3 days of like an open call trying to find this new guy. And I got the job, and I've spoken to Phil Redmond, no relation, since. He was the boss there. I don't remember this, but at the time, in the final audition, Vernon had gone home by then. I was still in Liverpool. He and the producer, Joe Hallow, said, look, we really like you for this role. And I said, oh, no, I can't act.
Yeah, I've not done my classes yet.
Yeah, I said, I haven't started my classes. I'm just here for the experience, but thank you for seeing me. And they said, no, we think you're really good. You've got a potential. I said, well, no, don't give me the job. I'm going to let you down. Honestly, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just blagging it, really. That's being myself. You know, and they said, well, that's good, really, because you can take notes and you're like a sponge to us. We can help you. And it was a great place to start because all the directors were like fresh out of college and most of the actors were out of stage school or drama school or uni or whatever. So it's like a real sort of learning vibe there. You know, everyone was quite open to giving each other notes and help. And I was so lucky. I got paired with Ben Hull.
Yes, of course, Lewis.
Yeah, who is a brilliant talent. And secondly, just a lovely giving bloke. And he was just constantly saying, that's really good, mate. Just, you know, really bigging me up the whole time. And then whenever I had any problems, he'd say, do you want some help? And I go, yeah, sure. And he'd help me. And I could always go to him. Yeah. So he taught me so much stuff, you know. Even the technical stuff like hitting marks and, you know, not shadowing each other, not overlapping each other and all this stuff.
And they're the hardest things, actually. Like I've worked with, when I've directed, so, you know, and you get actors in from the National Theatre, for instance, but actually they're not used to hitting marks and lights on TV. It's kind of a big skill to learn, isn't it? Because you can't look like you're looking at a mark.
Yeah, and you see it a lot. I'm sure you do too, watching movies. I mean, I saw Marlon Brando do it.
I've seen so many people. It's mad, isn't it?
Streetcar, you think he's maybe the best actor of all time, but every time he walks anywhere, he looks down before he stops. And I had it on Casualty, you know, because we get what was great about Casualty. One of the things was that we'd have 10 guest artists a week, you know, three patients and then their backstory cast. And we get some amazing actors who've done, you know, Oscar winners and Oscar nominated actors. I mean, and brilliant talents that you're just in awe of working with. And then they'd, you know, look at their marks or overlap you or do something that they're not really, really used to doing because they're mainly theatre actors who've done the odd film, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was a sort of levelling experience, really learning.
Well, I love the fact that you're probably the only person ever to have been trying to talk someone out of giving you a job. You know what I mean? That's incredible. Please, don't give it to me. Don't give it to me.
Well, and I actually got them to give me lessons. I had lessons the first, it must be the first 6 months. They gave me lessons, and then they gave a few others lessons, which won't be a surprise to some listeners. They gave a few of us lessons, like we're doing workshops, you know. It was the guys, there were a few of us. I was the first one, I think, who had never done any acting at all. I'd not even done a school play. And then after me, there were a couple of other models who'd come through as well. So they were doing the same sort of thing. And
that's probably why it was so big, though, with students especially. Do you know what I mean? That it was a bunch of new actors. Not that I think everyone was really good in it, but that you have that Emmerdale, which at the time was quite hokey. Do you know what I mean? It was quite hammy. Whereas then you just had this new group. And you guys, I mean, there was you, Will Meller, obviously Nick Pickard, Lewis. I mean, and then you, Terry Dwyer. You guys kind of became massive, didn't you, as a group?
Yeah, well, again, I was lucky. Just after I started, Andy Peters took over at Channel 4 teenage programming, and he kind of invented this thing on a stage, which was like five programs aimed at teenagers. Teenage programming on Channel 4, T4.
Which was massive for anyone who's...
Which was huge.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were on equity minimum rates, you know. So I'd be bumping into like Adam Rickett thinking, wow, you're on four times my wages. What? But then suddenly our wages doubled because we were suddenly on twice a week. You know, we got the omnibus and it was amazing. So it was just so successful. We went from, I joined, it was two nights a week, and then it went up to three and then to four nights a week, and then we got the omnibus as well. This is all within the first sort of 6 months, so it's like it doubled and then doubled again. So wow, this is amazing. I haven't really learned to act yet, but thank you.
Yeah, this is incredible. Yeah, it was a fun it was a really good time for TV, and for, because obviously then also kids and younger people didn't have social media to go on every second of the day. So like things like, because imagine now, I used to work on Saturday morning TV, 4 hours. Can you imagine kids now sitting down for 5 hours to watch a show? Like, it can happen. It's changed so much, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it really has. I mean, it was a great time. I mean, everyone says, don't they, in their 50s, always better in my day, but it really was great.
I know. We've just been old.
It really was a great time. And I learned, obviously, you know, you enjoy your job when you're learning, don't you, and improving and getting paid better and better all the time. It's just really...
Yeah, it gets better and better. And I suppose at that age as well, I mean, fame... is a questionable thing. Some people like it, some people don't. I mean, how did you handle it? Because obviously it must be, as a younger guy or a younger girl, kind of is the thing of dreams, I suppose, that people are, you know, knowing who you are, you can get into clubs in the VIP section and stuff. Was it kind of, did you find it a nice ride that time?
Yeah, I mean, luckily, you know, once again, I was lucky because I was 26 when I started, although I was playing a 19-year-old, and I'd already been through a kind of brush with fame from doing the modelling.
Famous,
you know, for my name, but I've been on billboards and adverts and catwalks and all that. And I got used to being paid far too much for doing nothing, really. And I kind of got used to that. And I've earned a lot of money modelling, then lost it all, you know, just burnt it all. So I kind of learned from that. But yeah, it does. It's a weird thing getting recognised and, you know, and you know, frankly, being getting more attention from women that perhaps you wouldn't have done before, but it does mess with your ego, and you do sort of lose sight of yourself and turn into this kind of version of yourself. The funniest one was when I first joined, they gave me all these cards of myself, you know,
the cast cards to sign for people, yeah.
Yeah, and you've got like 1,000 made up. I'm not going to do 1,000 autographs, am I? Yes. And here's some marker pens, and you'd carry these around with you every day. And of course, I just did, because I didn't know that that's what wankers do, really. None of my mates and colleagues, they said, we all do that. And this is before mobile phones. I was in Tesco, Allerton Road in Liverpool, which is where my grandmother was from. It's just like an embarrassing thing. And I'm in Tesco walking around with this big bunch of cards and a pen. And this little old lady spotted me and sort of double took and then walked up. And I thought, oh, here we go. My first ever autograph. So I took my card and pen out and she went, hello, love. I'm so sorry to do this. Can you reach that down for me? Because I'm 6'3". That's what she was looking at. So
amazing. Oh my God, that is hilarious. Right, well, I'm going to take you down a little memory lane trip with a quiz to get through some of the storylines, see if you can remember these.
Right.
We should do, I think. Who discovered, so this was your first episode, who discovered Finn in Jambo's old shed?
Ooh, God, was it Tony?
It was, yeah. Tony Nick Picard, of course, who's still at Hollyoaks. I mean, he's the god of Hollyoaks. And that became a great relationship, didn't it? Really comical rivalry. And you ended up, which I love, being basically his dad.
Yes, it was great. I mean, Nick, as I'm sure you know, is just a beautiful human being. Just a lovely,
amazing.
He's like team captain of that show. He's just so welcoming and lovely to everyone. He runs the football team and a lot of the nights out, and he's just a great leader, really, just chivvies everyone on. And I was, again, lucky that I was in scenes mainly with Ben Hull and Nick Picard, because Nick was lovely too, and he's very fun, very talented as well. I mean, when he does the straight stuff, I think, wow, he's really good actor. I'm kind of used to him doing the funny stuff, but he's got such comedy, such good comic timing, like Ben has as well. So I was lucky again, because often I'd do a scene, I was new, you know, and those two are both, you know, seasoned professionals. I'd have a scene where they had all the dialogue for like three or four pages, and then I'd have just one sarky line at the end, one sort of comedy line, and I'd steal the laugh, you know. But they worked to sort of make that work. They weren't, you know, jealous or competitive or, you know, like you hear of, you know, some actors being on other shows. I was very lucky.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's always like that, Hollyoaks thing. And again, because it's very unique that you get a show where most of the cast is the same age. Do you know what I mean? Because normally it's a really big mixture. So on Coronation Street, for example, I mean, everyone gets on, but it's very, very different pockets of people. Because obviously you've got people from like 12 to 90.
Yeah, that's the thing. I really noticed that. Having done, you know, I did 7 episodes of Corrie.
Yeah, you did
six,
a few. Yeah.
And it's a much bigger cast. I mean, although the Hollyoaks cast is bigger now. But yeah, you're right. It's different sort of cliques of people. Of course, there are different age groups and you know, people in different stages of their lives and stuff. But it's funny at Hollyoaks because it's you know, an independent company that makes it for Channel 4. And the wages are, you know, lower than the other shows.
It's still true, isn't it? It's still true that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's because the audience figures are lower, you know, and if that weren't the case, I wouldn't have had my chance. And most of us wouldn't, you know, because we took those jobs, you know, and it was great. But as a consequence, lots of people there are learning, you know, some of the first ADs should be second. Some of the directors should be first ADs, but they're getting the chance now and they learn quickly and they become brilliant, you know, and everyone kind of parties together. It's long hours, you know, as I'm sure you know, it's sort of.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and everyone kind of, I remember when I was there, everyone lives down the same street.
Night, but you still go out every night.
Yeah, everyone's out and everyone kind of lives on the same street.
Pretty much. Yeah, I mean, there are loads of them on Lark Lane, and there are two or three sort of big pockets of where people are. But yeah, I mean, everyone, there's always a leaving, there's always a birthday party, always stuff going on. You think, oh, I've got 10 scenes tomorrow. How are you all going out again?
Yeah, that's kind of early soap life as well, isn't it? What I loved about Hollyoaks as well, it's very different because obviously the bit, Emmerdale and Corrie and EastEnders, you've got the big studios with the big sets. And when I arrived to do Hollyoaks, I was like, wow. It was in, I think it's still in the same place, isn't it? But it was in an old kind of school.
Yeah,
and just, I mean, I never found my way around. It was literally impossible. You'd suddenly be in someone's bedroom. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, get this. I mean, it's quite a small campus, really. But get this. When I was there, they had Brookie and Grange Hill there as well. So you'd walk
at the same time on that same place?
Yeah. Yeah, so you'd walk from, you know, the Cunninghams' living room and you'd turn left rather than right. Oh, sorry, I've just walked into an action and there's, you know, Paul Byatt doing a scene from Brookie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah, it was really interesting. And then you'd walk down to the canteen and see half the Grange Hill cast. Yeah, it was interesting. And then they just spread it because I think it was so successful, Hollyoaks, so quickly. They weren't really ready. So we were going to Chester a couple of days a week to film, and then it was like, wow, we need to be here more because it's just taking too much time to do all that traveling and just, you know, build the set. So that suddenly, you know, well, you can't build out, let's build up. So suddenly it was two or three floors high, you know.
Yeah, that's true. And that's what they keep doing with the outside set, because it's quite small, but they've now built the last one, so they've built a wall that you can now walk along. It's like, let's keep building up. But let's get back to the quiz. So what was Finn was a bit of a ladies man. Can you name two of his conquests?
Well, Jude, of course, was the
Jude
first one.
Of course, yes.
Yeah. The lovely Davinia. And then Carol, of course, was his long-term girlfriend as well.
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, just for a bonus, Tony's mum. You know, why not?
Yes, Victoria. Which obviously that started, I think I'm right in saying that was an affair. And then Tony found out. You didn't know it was his mum when you started sleeping with her.
That's what he said. Yeah.
Yeah. Finn had other ideas. Now, Hollyoaks has been... Oh, is this a quiz? Oh, no, this is not a quiz question. This led off to this. I was going to say, because it's always been known, obviously, more than the other soaps for its fit boys, fit girls. You know, that I remember doing so many scenes where you just thought, why is this person topless in this scene? I don't really get it. But anyway, go with it. It's Hollyoaks. But, I mean, it's changed so much since you were in it. The pressure now, obviously... on younger actors with social media. I mean, are you glad that you're in something like that before social media? Because obviously the trolling and the critics now of you on telly is huge.
Yeah. And also before muscles, really, you know, because yes. when I was on, yeah. you know, you had about sort of six of the main male characters and, you know, one or two of them were quite muscular and the rest of us were quite skinny, really, you know, and didn't use sunbeds, you know, and perhaps looked a little bit rubbish. I mean, these guys today, they don't drink, they don't do anything, they're in the gym every day as well as going, as well as working, they bleach their teeth. It's like, wow, we could not have competed with
I
them.
Know. Well, it's you're the same kind of... We're kind of from the same generation. I say this to younger people, like, gyms just kind of didn't exist. No one went to the gym of my mates.
What's worse is that I did go to the gym, but I was still skinny.
Did you?
Yeah, I did, yeah. But yeah, I mean, we were just going out so much, but the pressure wasn't, I mean, obviously compared to the girls, it was nothing because the girls just had so much scrutiny, you know, even back then in the late 90s, it was FHM and Lodi were doing photo shoots.
Oh, of course, FHM was massive, wasn't it? That was kind of where you had to get into if you wanted to make your name then.
That's it. And the girls just felt so much pressure. And you think, God, you really don't need to feel this pressure. You know, you're really beautiful and also talented, you know, but oh, no. I need a new contract. I need to, you know, so-and-so's just done the cover. I need to do one as well. Oh, and it was just so much pressure for girls who were, you know, frankly, younger than us too, because most of the guys there were in their 20s playing teenagers and the girls were teenagers playing teenagers on the whole. You know, it's quite hard. I mean, there's a good team of producers there, you know, making sure that they were okay with their, you know, chaperones and their parents were often around and all that, but it is a lot of pressure.
Yeah, of course, no matter what you do, that's our duty of care though. It's always going to be fame, just that level of kind of, I need to look like you said, so-and-so's on the cover, I need to do it because otherwise I'm not going to get contract. Which kind of is true as well. But let's get back to it. After a bank loan, which popular Hollyoaks fixture did Finn build?
Oh, he built the loft, the nightclub. Yes. Is that become a yes?
Yeah, yes, very good, mate. And that's still, the legacy still continues. The loft is still there, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. I know. I should still be getting paid. I should surely get some money.
maybe
just fictionally I should. Finn should, you know, but surely.
And whose death made Finn rethink his life plans?
Lewis's death.
Yes, Ben Hole, who obviously I looked through your social media actually, and he's godfather, I think, to your child.
He is, and vice versa. Yeah, I'm godfather to his second daughter. Yeah, he's a good friend of mine, Ben, obviously, and he lives not too far from me, so we kind of meet up as often as we can.
That's really nice. I love to hear that people do stand, because you always hope that people have stayed in touch. It's like when the Friends cast got back together and it's a bit like, I'm not sure you've seen each other at all since you've left.
I see Nick a bit as well. Nick, obviously, he's up there, but he's got his pub in Ladbroke Grove. So I see him.
Oh, of course he has. Yeah. And final question about Hollyoaks. How did Finn leave Hollyoaks? I mean, I kind of love this.
This is amazing. Finn left on a barge with Kat Deeley, as you do.
I mean, and was that tying into what I'm going to ask next about, because you then went on to present SMTV, was that to do with
I
that?
Did. Yeah, it was. Yeah, I mean, she was trying to get into acting at the time and I was offered that job. And I thought about it, and then most of my friends said, yeah, go and try it. None of them said, no, you're too good an actor. Stay as an actor. They all said, try something else. Try and do a different thing now. So yeah, it was kind of written in that way. But typical Finn, you know, he meets this beautiful woman and takes her off on his barge, you know, classy to the end.
Classy. And where was Kat Deeley? That's amazing. And then you did do SMTV. So I'm guessing did you take over from Anton Deck?
I did. So, you know,
yeah, I mean, because you were only there 3 months, which must have been gutting. But I mean, what? Because I was working on the other side. I was on the Saturday show and Live and Kicking.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
We were being like trounced. Do you know what I mean? So, you couldn't have. No one, what a job to step into. It must have been nerve wracking.
Oh, it was so exciting. But yeah, as I say, you know, quite big shoes to fit into, especially because there are four of them, you know. But yeah, it was really tough. I mean, I did my best, and we worked really hard on it. But yeah, I mean, in the end, it was just too much too early, because I hadn't done any presenting. I was so used to sort of, you know, looking, just, you know, avoiding the camera.
But it probably wasn't you either, though, because I think whenever a big show's happened, it never were. I mean, I did What Not to Wear, they replaced Julian Susanna with two brilliant people, but it just never, it's really hard to recapture it. It's normally then the third person to take over, normally then kind of, yeah. It's almost like things need to rest.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, had I been new to it, had it been a new show, I think perhaps I could have done better. Or had, as you say, had I been coming in off the back of a flop.
Yes, yeah, rather than, yeah. But still, yeah. What great, I mean, I used to love Saturday morning telly working on it. It was such a buzz, wasn't it? I mean, incredible.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, I did, you know, it was 10 three-hour shows of live telly, you know, so that was pretty demanding and daunting, you know, but it was great fun. Again, you know, the writers were great, the sketches that we did were just brilliant fun, and you know, and I loved working with Kat and Brian Dowling and Tess Daly. They're all great. So
yeah, and did you what we used to do was go to the BBC bar after the Saturday show and then literally go out. So you'd be one Saturday you'd be out with S Club 7 kind of down the bed bar in Shepherd's Bush. Did you kind of do the same over on there? Did you all go out together?
It was similar, although I kind of hung out with Kat more than the other two. And it was more of an indie thing, like, because we were both into like the Strokes and Kings of Leon.
Oh, okay.
So we were always kind of trying to get tickets for these, I mean, and, you know, managing to get tickets for these gigs and stuff. So we were always looking at that, really. But it's just shattering, isn't it? Because if you've done 3 hours, I mean, you've been up since 5.
Yeah, and then you just go and get horrendously drunk, and then Sunday's a write-off, and then you're back to work on a Monday. Oh, it was like the most intense job. Okay, so leaving that behind, we'll quickly flick through some of the other things. Mile High, you did, which was on Sky, their raunchy drama, which I read about that, and I loved for the third series, it was actually cancelled after that because Sky wanted to go less raunchy. But yeah, what was that? I never saw it, I have to admit. Did you have to do some raunchy stuff?
Yeah, it was brilliant. It's very well written. Again, it was very fast paced and quite sort of modern for its time. And I worked with a couple of actors that I worked with before, Adam Sinclair and Joanne Knowles, who were on Hollyoaks Moving On and Hollyoaks.
Oh yeah, yeah. Which of course we should have mentioned. You did go to do Hollyoaks later, Hollyoaks Moving On.
Yeah,
at that time they did all the spin-offs, which is great. Yeah.
Yes, it was, and we were in Spain back and forth. That was brilliant for six months. I really enjoyed that show as well. Yeah.
And what was it like filming it? Because it filmed at London Stansted and Palma de Mallorca, I think. What was it? I always think it must be a nightmare filming in airports.
Well, yeah, I thought it would be. I mean, we had this sort of we had this fake plane that they built. So most of the stuff.
Okay.
It was actually filmed at 3 Mill Studio, you know, Bromley by Bow. But we did do quite a lot at Stansted, you know, in the main concourse and outside and stuff. But it was just fun. I mean, it was a great fun cast, you know, and crew. So, yeah, I've just got great memories of that as well.
And then obviously Casualty, another 5-year job. I mean, Casualty, I've done Holby, I haven't done Casualty. I mean, I found that after Soap so weird because it was single camera. I mean, Hollyoaks is more single camera actually anyway, but the bed scenes I just remember took forever. It's kind of a very different way of working, isn't it, the medical dramas?
Yeah, and it was a big step up for me, you know, because, you know, you're confident on Hollyoaks and Mile High. You think, well, I'm pretty confident. I'm not the worst here. You know, I can get by. I'm not getting in trouble. I'm getting through my scenes in not too many takes. And then you go to the Casualty, you think, God, I am the worst here. no one needs more than one take. God, that's Charlie. I've got a scene with Charlie. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
don't,
God, you're
in a voice, because I'm from Bristol, and it was shot in Bristol for years and years and years, you know, so I was a fan. So that was kind of daunting as well. But he was lovely and helped me settle in, and I got used to it pretty quickly and just loved it. Very different because, you know, I wasn't playing a comedy character. I was very serious, playing a psychiatric nurse, you know, and playing much slower scenes. It was quite a clever thing to do because it's so rush, 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 fix this person, you know, don't let them die. To sort of relieve the tension, they'd kind of insert these psychiatric scenes where it was me going, why is this person back in here?
Yeah.
Why have they got injuries again? Are they self-harming? Are they getting abused at home? What's happening, you know? And I was more like Miss Marple, you know, trying to work out why stuff was happening. And I really enjoyed it. I learned loads.
And how was the audition process for that? Did you audition or was it an offer?
It was one audition, yeah. So I think they were kind of interested, but wanted to see how I'd be in the role. And I did one audition, and I got offered the job, and I just loved it immediately. And the character kind of, although it's, you know, I mean, it wasn't anything like Finn. He was a Bristolian, you know, and I am too, so I could do the accent. And I think they liked the fact that I could do the slower stuff, you know. And I was just getting married at the time, so I thought, well, move to Bristol, you know, and settle down. So it was a really good move at the time. I'm now divorced.
Yeah, well, that, and not in custody, but there we go. It's a life change. That's now normal life. Because he was involved in some really heavy stuff as well, wasn't it? The backstory came up a while after you were there, that you basically left your brother, not you, he did, left his brother paralyzed and in the end died because of an alcohol addiction, because of you, your character joyriding. So Matt, and then your friend came back and then she died. Massive kind of backstory. You must then know that they love you because they're investing so much in your backstory when that happens.
Yeah. And again, I mean, it wasn't just that story, which was great. That whole storyline was brilliant. But, you know, every other week, I would say I'd get something to do, which wasn't, you know, just playing a nurse. It was playing a psych nurse, so I'd have to deal with some sort of psychosis. So they would give me pamphlets and DVDs. They were back in those days, not links, you know, to read up on, you know, paedophilia, you know, or self harm, or, you know, bulimia or something. And then I was, you know, fast tracking, going down and shadowing nurses and psychiatric nurses at the Bristol Royal Infirmary, learning how to speak to people who've suffered these traumas. Yeah. So, I've always been interested in mental health anyway. So it was great to learn about a lot of that stuff. I actually self-diagnosed.
Did you?
Yeah, ADHD. I thought, God, this is really sounding like me. And like a lot of performers, I have ADD probably now, but as a kid, I was certainly ADHD, you know. So that was interesting. I told my mum and she started crying and saying, I knew there was something. It wasn't your fault.
Yeah, it wasn't that you were gay. It was ADHD. And that's the great thing about telly, isn't it? Because I've worked, you know, I've series with gardening shows and learned everything there is to know about gardening. And then I'll be on a crime show. It's kind of, our job is brilliant for that you kind of learn stuff that you never would in a really fast track way by the people that are like at the top of their game.
Yeah, tiring but never boring, is it? I think that's the thing, is that we're so lucky. And, you know, people say, when should you leave a soap? When you're bored. Well, people don't really win. People don't leave by choice unless they've got another job to go to, because you don't really get bored. You haven't really got time to get bored. You know, you're kind of always learning. And you've got a great cast around you most of the time. You know, you're really enjoying being at work.
Would you go back to, I mean, I know you went back to Hollyoaks a few times, because I know Jeremy Edwards, who was on the podcast as well, kind of got real flack when he went back, because obviously he doesn't look like he used to back then. I mean, would you consider going back ever to kind of regain Finn in Hollyoaks?
Yeah. I mean, it was such a great character to play. I would love to go back, you know, and the same with Casualty, in fact. You know, he only went off, I think he got fed up with the NHS and its problems, really, you know, and the funding issues and all that. And he just went off to work in the prison service, you know, helping people there as a psychiatric, I don't know, member of staff. But I would love to go back there as well, you know. But it's both those jobs. You are, it's interesting. You're learning stuff every day on Casualty, and with Hollyoaks, you've got so many storylines and things hitting.
Yeah,
you.
Yeah. Back. Oh God. I mean, if you can do Hollyoaks and those hopes, it's like you can do anything. Can't you? It's like literally you. I mean, everyone says that. I mean, I've had people like Alan coming on, who's obviously now in massive movies, and he looks back at Soap Time and was like, it's where I learned everything.
Yeah, well, Shane Ritchie, remember this very well. Shane Ritchie was a really nice guy. I only met him once, but at the Soap Awards, he won Best Actor one year, and he got up to take his award. He said, look, we all know I'm not the best actor here. I'm not the best actor in my family. I can get by. But I'm accepting this on behalf of all of us, because, you know, soap actors get a lot of stick. But,
yeah.
You know, it's hard work. You know, we work at such a rate. You know, when you shoot a movie, you're probably doing 18 months on a 90-minute film, you know. Whereas here, we've got to do, you know, how many minutes a week are you doing? You know, what is it, about 50?
Basically, I always said I always filmed a block, which would be normally like 2 hours worth of television, and you did it in like 2 weeks, which is basically making a movie every fortnight.
Yeah, and often you'd get to the point where you just do one take, and they go, right, got it, moving on. And you go, oh, I don't think I was really in it. I couldn't really feel the emotions in that one. I might have got a line wrong. Sorry, got to move on. Wow, okay, that's going to go out on telly. Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, luckily as a director, I wouldn't ever do that. But yeah, the pressure is there. And then what I loved about, you know, soap and what EastEnders, you know, like June Brown would come on and 20 minutes after she's telling you how her day is, you're going, oh my God, I'm half an hour behind already. Do you know what I mean? And you have all that to do because it's like, because it's so sociable as well. Obviously a lot happens between scenes. I mean, on Hollyoaks, I think I've told this story before, but I was dumbfounded by how many units worked at once. And I just remember we were like next door to another team film, and James Sutton was supposed to be in three scenes at the same time with three different directors.
I know. Well, that's how it is now. When I was there, two units. So yeah, you had to sort of alternate takes because you'd be doing a scene in Finn's yard and they'd be shooting something else in, you know, the Cunninghams, whatever. So you go, okay, cut, and then they're rolling up, action, and they go, and silence. Everyone's got to be silent while they reset for the next take on their bit. Yeah.
And then, so were you as a young guy? Obviously, we picked it up at the beginning of the podcast when you were already kind of partying and starting modelling. What did you want to do when you were younger? Did you ever think about? I'm guessing you never thought about acting and stuff.
Well, to be honest, I did. I mean, I wanted to be a footballer, like a lot of boys did. But I did, if I'm honest, I did also fancy acting. But I had a stutter all through school. I had quite a bad stammer, so I was very afraid to do any drama. Or speaking class, even, or answer the questions with the teacher, you know.
Oh, right. Okay.
But my mum read an article about, you know, how acting can help that. So she kind of got me to do a house play. I went to a public school and I did a house play. And in that, I played a character very different to me. I played a dinner lady. So I was in drag and with a strong accent. And I found, God, I'm not stuttering in an accent. It's much like, you know, singers don't stutter, you know, Gareth Gates famously.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Rowan Atkinson famously puts on that, you know, very posh voice and over enunciates Bob, all that stuff. That's because of his stutter. So yeah, I kind of realized pretty quickly while doing Hollyoaks, I'm actually enjoying this and I can get by, you know, and it really helped me.
That's really interesting. I never actually thought of that much about that. If you're younger and you've got stutter, it is a great thing to do, I suppose, putting on a different face and a different thing. And then. Yeah. Obviously, later on in life, you've now got a family. I mean, that must change stuff as well, I suppose. Does it make choosing jobs harder? Because obviously, as we all know, when you're young, free and single and you can move to wherever for 6 months, but obviously life becomes more complicated, doesn't it, when you get older?
Yeah. Well, your listeners are going to hate me for this, but it's actually been quite good timing for me. This whole sort of pandemic and energy crisis and Brexit, actually, because... Finally, at the age of 48, I became a father. And my girlfriend, Sarah.
Amazing, yeah.
Thank you, mate. Best thing I've ever done. And my girlfriend, Sarah, and I were sort of planning, you know, for a couple of years to do that and saving up. And then just as it happened, you know, she was 4 months pregnant when lockdown started, the first one. So I planned to take time off because she's got a proper job and she gets paid well, you know. So it's like, okay, well, I've got property and I've got savings and you've got a good job. I think we can make this work. You know, one of us could stay at home. So I've been staying at home and doing the night shifts. And, you know, even now she's almost three now, Maya, but she gets up and, you know, climbs into bed and all that most nights and then doing the nursery run. And on her days off from nursery, I'm with her. So I'm available for that. But I was scared that I'd be missing out on work and, you know, kicking myself. But there hasn't been much work, you know, because of the aforementioned crises.
Yeah, you were kind of at home and it was what a time to enjoy your family when you couldn't do that, when you couldn't do anything else. How amazing.
Yeah, I've got so many friends of mine, actors, who've said, look, mate, don't miss these first 5 years. I was away just, you know, working as hard as I could to put bread on the table. And I missed stuff happening. I'd come home after a week on tour and go, oh, well, my child's learned to walk. Oh, I missed it. You know, or they've grown loads. Oh, they're not really sure who I am. I've been away for a month, you know. So I've been so lucky again. I've just been so lucky in my life, really. But yeah, so that's been the last 3 years almost. It's been that, really. But I've just done, I did We Hunt Together, which is a show with the brilliant Eve Miles. That's on iPlayer at the moment. I did one episode of that.
Amazing. You did The Outlaws with Stephen Merchant, didn't you? An episode of that. Amazing.
Which, yeah. which was great. Big hero of mine, comedy hero. And it was brilliant. I did my scenes with him, you know, talking across the desk with him. That was brilliant fun. So those are the two things I've done most recently. And I do stand up at the weekends. I've been doing stand up for 14 years.
Yeah. And how did that? Because again, I mean, we go to stand up all the time in Leeds. I absolutely love stand up. But it is the most, I think, scary job I could never imagine, even though I can public speak and I'm happy in front of like big groups of people talking. But I can't imagine getting up there with that first joke. I mean, what was it, again, something that you always wanted to do, or did you fall into it?
Yeah, well, like you, I was always a big comedy fan. I used to go to comedy clubs and watch all the time. I was very lucky. I saw Peter Kay when he first started. Amazing. In Liverpool. You know, to see him every Thursday for like £3. He was the MC of a club there. And then I just fancied doing it and learning. And it's a great skill to learn. But it's like any job, you know, there are tricks and, you know, smoke and mirrors. You know, you're learning mainly how to look confident on stage so that yes. your material, when it doesn't go well, the audience don't really notice, you know, because as soon as you let them know that you aren't confident or, you know, you're not enjoying yourself, it gets very tense, you know. I just loved it. I mean, even my first gig, my first ever gig, obviously died on my ass.
But I came off did stage. You? Yeah, you did. Yeah.
I came off stage and said to the MC, can I go back on? So that's a sign of something, you know. But I just love it. It's brilliant fun. And I get to watch because I, you know, on most comedy, as you know, on most comedy bills, you get three or four comedians.
Yes, yeah.
So you get to watch three other comics. And often, you know, they're at different levels. One's the headliner who's been going 20 years, whatever. And one's new but exciting, you know, and the other one's in the middle there somewhere. And often, you know, even now it's getting better because we're getting more diversity. So you're not getting three straight white middle-aged men.
No, yeah, lots of women, lots of people of different, yeah, race. It's amazing. I mean, have you ever done a Leeds one at the Hi-Fi Club in Leeds?
I was going to mention the Hi-Fi because Toby Jones, who runs it and books it, has booked me a lot. He's got lots of gigs, and that is probably his best gig. So yeah, I'm pleased. I was going to ask you if you've been to that one. It's a great
gig. It's amazing. Oh yeah, well, you have to come back. You have to come back and
Well, it's harder now because I'm doing the nursery one. I can't really leave London until 7 when Sarah gets home from work.
Right. Okay. So yeah, that's
I can do Saturdays, but it's a long way to go for just one gig and come back. It makes more sense financially to go and do, you know, three
the
nights
local ones. Yeah. And where is your favorite? I mean, do you find audiences? I mean, I always ask this more to musicians, but do you find audiences different around the country, or is it not really? Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, London is kind of famous for, or infamous for, having quite sort of quiet,
a hard audience to get going. Yeah.
Yeah, they'll sort of nod and say, that's clever, that's funny. Well, when do you actually laugh then? And then the further away you go from London, the more appreciative they are that you've made the effort. And they've made an effort. Often this is their big night out of the month, you know. So they're all kind of more dressed up and more up for it. The West Country is very easy because it's quite a friendly, slower place. Liverpool's meant to be quite tough because they're obviously Scousers are the funniest people in Britain.
It's a tough crowd. I mean, I always think Leeds is quite living in London for 7 years and then coming here, everything's just much, I mean, I love London, but much nice. Do you know what I mean? Everyone's just much more friendly.
I really do enjoy everywhere because I enjoy the sort of challenge of having to tweak my approach and my material to different areas of the country. But yeah, I mean, even Liverpool, you know, I've got family there and I've got a lot of knowledge there. I lived there for 4.5 years. So I've got stuff that I can relate to and I can reference. And yeah, I'm very lucky. Again, I keep saying it, but I do love my jobs.
And when you say jobs, actually, because it's not just TV you've done and modelling, you've also done stage. And obviously you've done the tour of the Full Monty, probably the biggest Hindu gatherings ever, I would say. How was that?
Yeah, it really was. It was like that. You know, it was, we had lots and lots of Hindus in, and I guess the female to male ratio was about 80-20, I would guess. And they were pretty raucous. And we had some really big, what was it? It was 9 months. I think we did something like,
months.
Yeah. How many weeks is that? I didn't know.
God, was that like, so that was a tour that was like a week, was it, in each place, or did you do less than a week?
Yeah. It was a week in each place. I think it was 2 weeks in Sheffield, but it was a week in each place. So 8 shows in each place.
Wow.
So how many shows that's a lot of shows, isn't it?
That's a lot of shows. That's a lot of different 80% of women, 20% of men going for their one night out for a ladies' night out. And who was in the, because obviously that's toured. It's obviously a very successful show. Who were you in it with?
Gary Lucy was the lead, playing Gaz, and then Kai Owen played Dave, and then Andy Dunn played Gerald. Joe Gill, who you know well,
yes, played Lomper.
Yeah, he was Lomper. And Lewis Emmerich played Horse, and they had a great supporting cast as well.
And then you were the guy who had the rather large package, and we've already talked about this, and you had to wear a prosthetic, and apparently it fell off one night. That must have been your worst nightmare, I suppose.
It was hilarious because my entrance is the end of Act One, where it's the audition scene, and Horse and I both get picked. And so, you know, if you remember the film, you know,
you calling the other one a horse, because obviously your character was the one known for it, wasn't it? So, or was
that's
that?
It. Yeah, well, the other one was called Horse, sort of sarcastically, because he had a small
right,
one.
Okay.
Yeah, but the lead character, Gary Lucy's character, says, "Oh, well, you can't sing and you can't dance. What can you do?" And I say, "Well, there is this," and I drop my trousers, and then this sort of 12-inch prosthetic drops. I'm facing him with my back to the audience. It drops sort of between my legs. And I sort of swing it about as the curtain comes down slowly to huge applause, you know, and sort of shrieks of laughter. And one night it fell off, which was great. So I'm sort of swinging it about and it fell off. And what was even better was that it landed just sort of below my legs that were sort of spread apart. And Gary Lucy perfectly just sort of knelt beneath my legs and handed it to me. So he was sort of framed by my leg.
Amazing.
And then at the start of Act Two, we're doing our first rehearsal in our pants, and I've got this other prosthetic in. So, I mean, it's crazy. It's about, you know, 9-inch prosthetic sort of in this pair of briefs. And, of course, I had it in, and Gary said, ad-libbed with them. Don't worry, mate. They obviously put it back in, did they? You're okay. No one noticed.
Amazing. And I mean, tricks the trade. So what happens, because I actually haven't seen the show, but I know at the end, obviously in the film you can film things very differently, but on the stage the reveal is kind of these group of, you know, working lads finally do a performance and obviously strip off, and in the film obviously it goes behind, but obviously you're facing the audience. And I know because my mate's done it, Matthew Wolfenden, and you know, the lights go down, but I've always thought, still, surely you've got an audience full of people with camera phones, you know, and obviously you don't want those pictures circulated. So could anyone actually see, or was it kind of totally blinded to the audience?
Well, supposedly, yeah, I had a few friends go, and a couple of them sat on the far ends of the front couple of rows. And there you can see, apparently, because as we do this big finale dance, we strip off right at the end, you know, like the last bit is throwing these hats away that were covering us, you know. And they're blasted with light, so we're suddenly silhouettes, you know. So standing there naked, but silhouetted. But if you're not facing the stage, if you're on the side in the wings kind of thing, then you're not hit by the light, so you can see everything.
Yeah, full view. That's quite funny, because normally those seats, the ones advertised as kind of like, you don't get a full view of the show, actually. For that show, that's the full view. So anyone going to the next tour of the Full Monty, heard it here exclusively, get the end seats near the front and you're going to get the full view. And obviously, Soap for the Box, we have to mention as well, we kind of mentioned it before, but you also went into Corrie and Emmerdale. But let's just mention Corrie, otherwise we'll be here all day. I mean, that must have been, what was that like as an expert? Because obviously Hollyoaks and Casualty, main cast member, obviously I've directed lots of soaps where you have big names coming in to play guest parts, but must be very different because suddenly you're not the one that's like the, you know, the cast that's there all the time. Suddenly you're entering into something which is obviously, as we all know, is phenomenal. When you walk into the Rovers and it's like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm here. Was it very different than working on Hollyoaks where you were kind of established?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was daunting, obviously, walking into such an iconic show. And, you know, I had scenes in the Rovers, but I'd met Kim Marsh before. I was playing Kim Marsh's love interest. She's having this little sort of new relationship while Simon Gregson's character is in a bit of a slump and has split up with her. So I had some great scenes with her. She was so lovely to me. She's really
she was
well.
She was brilliant. She's one of the best. She was so brilliant, Kim, in it as well, I thought. She was really good.
Yeah, and she was so welcoming to me and, you know, just said, oh, you know, lovely to see you. You know, because we did a bit of work on SMTV, CDUK back in the day.
Of course, when she was in Hearsay.
Yeah, that's it. And I think she's a Hollywood fan, you know. So she was very, you know, encouraging. And then I did sort of 7 or 8 episodes. And when I left, she got me a bottle of champagne and, you know, a bunch of flowers.
So also, I suppose for you, because Casualty is the same as Hollyoaks and it's single camera, was it weird? So, because there's not many, I mean, literally there's hardly any shows on telly like soap that are filmed, apart from live studio shows that are filmed multi-camera. Did you find that weird, that experience?
Yeah, it was easier for some reason on Corrie. With Emmerdale, it was, I don't know, it was the first time I think I'd done it on, I did Emmerdale, I think, 2 years before. And that was, you know, definitely the whole case. You sort of think, okay, well, that was, they bought the first take. It wasn't my best. I'll be better in my close-up. Oh, no, we've got 3 sizes done already. We've got a wide shot, a 2-shot, and a close-up done.
Oh. What? And also, I mean, I know as a director, I mean, I have to say I would always go performance. I would go again for actors, but the thing for everyone listening when you're doing multi-camera is not only is the performance got to be good, but you can so easily you can block out someone or you can get a shadow over you and the camera cannot quite be in position. There's so many more elements you're looking at, which is so annoying as a director as well. Because, I mean, again, you probably had to learn quite quickly that hitting your mark actually is so vital on stuff like that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Sort of, you know, 4 times more vital because you've got 4 different cameras on you. So you can't block any of them or your colleagues, you can't block them from those 4 cameras, you know. So yeah, it's really vital.
I think everyone needs to look, if you haven't seen it as well, look it up on YouTube. There's a scene, a famous Corrie scene where it's Emmerdale, where, and how this got stayed in, because obviously as a director you go through the edits and see it so many times, but it cuts a shot, there's a cameraman with one of the big camera peds right behind the bar in the middle of the scene.
Oh really? Oh,
that's
God.
Brilliant. So, right. Well, listen, it's been amazing to have you on the podcast. Like, what's in store for your future? I'm guessing, obviously, you're a dad at the moment, new dad. So that's taking up probably quite a bit of time. You've got comedy still, you know, chance you might go back to Hollyoaks or Corrie. Would that be on the table for you? Would you like to do that?
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, I'm just hoping more of the same, really. I mean, I've been up for some nice sitcoms and dramas recently. And like any actor, I'd love to do a movie, like a nice gritty British movie or something, you know. I love what Shane Meadows does, you know, but everyone does really. That sort of thing would be my dream. Awesome theatre. So, I'm just open to whatever happens next. And, you know, I love the soap. I love being in a big team at all the soaps as well. So, yeah, whatever's coming my way, I'll gladly
be away. Because a tour actually is really hard work, isn't it, though? I mean, a 9-month tour. I've got so many actor friends who really, even if they're out of work, really have to about, because as you get older, it gets harder to go on 9-month tours, doesn't it? It's like,
yeah, well, I would love to go on a 9-month tour, but my partner would kill me because we've got a 3-year-old.
yeah. You might have to take, and you're probably not quite in the like J-Lo league where they probably have a dressing room for the baby as well. Do you know what I mean?
No, that's it. Yeah. So, you've got to do the pickup, you've got to do bath time, you've got to feed the child. What are you doing?
You'd have someone to do that for you if you're J-Lo, wouldn't you? Do you know what I mean? I can't imagine J-Lo, you know, doing a makeup, doing all that. Well, anyway, mate, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for coming on.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And I'll definitely come and see you in stand-up, and hopefully we'll work together on some kind of drama very soon, because off mic we've been talking about stuff. So, yeah, listen, amazing to have you on, and take care.
Thank you. Likewise.
Thank you so much to the brilliant James Redmond. It's so nice reminiscing and going back in time and remembering some of those stories from my past and James's past. Hope you're enjoying the series. If there's anyone you want me to interview, please follow us on social media at Soap from the Box. Drop us a message and let us know, and we will endeavour to get that person on the show. Remember, there's over 80 episodes of Soap from the Box and Pop from the Box for you to listen to right now. So sit back. It's such horrible weather at the moment. Get a cup of tea and enjoy, maybe not 80 at once, you'll get really sick of me. But anyway, I will see you next week with Coronation Street star Lucy Fallon.